All right, so we're in the lab now. It's a little loud, so we're going to talk loud, but how are you doing?
So I'm doing good. What we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the Stock Trader app and do some demos here and show off some of the features. Uh-huh. And again, I want to kind of emphasize that there's really two parts to this sample that's on MSDN. And a site, again, that you can download the code from, the full sample, is msdn.microsoft.com/stocktrader.
Yeah.
Okay, and the setup is all one setup. It takes about 90 seconds to set this up. It'll do everything for you in the setup. Create the databases and the repositories for the services. Set up the StockTrader app. So all you need is a SQL Server box to point to, and you can run this setup in 90 seconds and have this full sample installed and ready to go, including all the source code and all the Visual Studio solutions that go with it.
Outstanding.
So I thought I'd just show off the sample to show you some of the features, some of the things that are behind it, and what it can do and what it's intended to kind of show.
Okay.
But keep in mind that there, again, coming from our whiteboard session, there's two parts to this. There's the StockTrader app itself. And the StockTrader app is, you know, where users can log in and place orders for stocks and kind of see it. That's the scenario. But behind that, as a service-oriented app, there's this configuration service. And I'm going to talk a lot about that because that's implemented by the app, but is separate in the download. It's shared libraries that you can use with the helper files to implement in your own apps and services if you're interested in the capabilities that this configuration service kind of brings to the table. And I thought I'd show some of those off.
Outstanding.
So this is the app. So I don't know if we can get a good zoom in on the screen here.
Totally.
And when you install it, this will be the home page that you see. I got to talk over all the servers we have running here. And you know, you can do some things just from the home page. For instance, there's architecture animations that will step you through the architecture of the app and the flow as users place orders and stock trades and what's going on between between layers. And I won't step through all the animations, but as you do, it'll really tell you what's going on in the architecture that you can then explore in the source code in the Visual Studio solutions as you go through. So that's just one nice thing. There's a lot of documentation. So using the configuration service to set up and configure the app, there's a tutorial and a whole document here that will step you through the steps to reconfigure the app to various remote modes that it can run in a service-oriented fashion.
Nice.
With screenshots and kind of directions on how to use it. Once you use the configuration service, it's called ConfigWeb, on one service, you can use it on any because it looks the same, but you kind of need some initial guidance on, hey, where do I go to do this or that. Once you've done it once, you're pretty much off and running. So I'm just going to go ahead and log into the app as a user. So this is the StockTrader app. It's a service-oriented app, and it runs in several modes. And the first mode I'm going to show off is what I call monolithic ASP.NET. Everything is running in a single monolithic app, so it's really not service-oriented. We're activating all the services in one process.
Okay.
But I'll log in as a user, and here's our home page. These pages are all using data-bound ASP.NET controls, in this case repeaters. So the layout looks really nice in Visual Studio. The graphical designers work really nice with the application. So this is our home page. We get a market summary. And you'll actually see the market move. If you drive load against this in a benchmark test, you will see the market move. The stock prices get updated based on volumes of trades made and things of that nature.
Nice.
And I'll go ahead to the quotes page. We can take a look at a quote for S0 maybe, buy 100 shares of that. Then you go off and place the order, and we'll get an order alert when that's been processed up here. So you can see the order's been placed, and it's now in our portfolio as the last order that I placed. So we have a portfolio holding in stock 0. You sort and subtotal these by symbol, so if I say go buy another 100 shares, or let's make it 1,000 shares, S0, and we go back to our portfolio and do sort and subtotal by stock, we'll see, you know, we're subtotaling it by stock symbol. That's actually kind of interesting in that we take advantage of all the C-sharp features for generic lists and doing things like custom comparers and sorting on the list within C#. So it actually,
nice.
There's some cool things in there that show you some of the advanced features that are available in .NET 2.0 just with the language and being able to do advanced things with lists and dictionaries.
Excellent. Now, again, you mentioned it's a monolithic application, but the SQL Server isn't living on the same machine.
That's right. When I say a monolithic application in this mode, and we'll move it to a remote distributed app in a minute, in this mode, the database is remote. That's sitting over there in the lab on a 64-bit server, my SQL Server box. But the application, all the logic, the user interface, the business services, and the order processor are all running within one worker process, one ASP.NET worker process right now, because that's the configuration I have. Now, keep in mind, it's a benchmark kit, right? It's designed to help IT administrators do capacity planning and developers and architects test out different configurations and remote invocations to see the performance characteristics of the app using different kind of architectures, if you will. And hence, it's very rich with different configuration options. And that's why we implemented the config service, to help you manage a distributed app that consists of multiple components running on many different servers, but be able to have one integrated kind of configuration experience as an admin on top of that service-oriented app.
Excellent.
So let's go ahead and take a look at that in a second. I'll just go into a couple more screens. Of course, you can look at your account, update your account profile, your passwords, and things of that nature. And again, this is a ASP.NET front end, but I do want to show you that when you install it, optionally, you also get, we'll go to our start menu, a WPF smart client. All right, so here's another user interface option built on top of the back-end services for the same app. In this case, a WPF smart client that we're going to fire up here.
Nice.
And we can take a look at this, all done in Rich Desktop with WPF. Could also be done in Silverlight and WPFE, for instance. And so you could actually invoke this with WPFE and run it on a Macintosh as another user interface option. So,
excellent.
Really, that's kind of one of the goals of service orientation. Separate logically and maybe even physically your services from your user interface technology. So for instance, here I could go and configure which remote business service I want to log into, and then go ahead and do a login to that particular business service. And here I'll go ahead and log into our IIS-hosted WCF service, which is running on LGLXP3. That's my local Vista machine here. And I'll connect up to that and then log in as a user in the smart client. We'll log in as, these are all benchmark users for benchmark scripts, so UID 8. They're all kind of logically named this way. And I'll log in, and we'll see our market summary come up. And we can scroll through the data here. We can go to our portfolio. Here's our portfolio. Notice in a rich client, we get some cool options. For instance, here we're using the modeling, 3D
nice.
Modeling capabilities in WPF to give more of a rich client experience. Also, you'll notice when we sort and subtotal by symbol, you know, the sorts are instantaneous here on the desktop, right? We don't have to go back to a web server and do the refresh or do an AJAX kind of thing. We can just get that capability as a rich client here with the sorting capabilities. And maybe we want to buy a stock, so let's go to our quotes page and we'll place an order. And let's buy 100 shares or 78 shares of this S0 stock, and we'll go ahead and let that place. Now, again, hands off, we're going to have an order alert. In the background, what's going to happen is this is getting processed now by the services, by the remote services that are IIS hosted. And that order is going to take a little bit of time to complete. But we've got an order alert system here, so when it does complete, we'll actually get an order alert pop up in this particular screen.
Interesting.
So right now, let's go ahead and log in, log out of our rich client and just minimize that. And go back here to our ASP.NET front end. And you're going to notice, you know, I showed you the welcome page. Of course, there's a glossary that kind of explains the stock trader terms, what's a holding, what's a stock. Not too interesting to a developer, but, you know, kind of the functional aspect. The more interesting thing here is the config web. All right? Now,
yes.
Notice you've got this menu item. And I'm going to launch that. And what we're going to do is we're actually launching a separate website that's a configuration management website. This manages the configuration of all the aspects of this composite application. And the key thing to keep in mind is this config web is part of the configuration service. It's completely separated from the StockTrader app. It's just implemented by the StockTrader app, so it works with it. But you could build your own application or your own service that has nothing to do with the StockTrader scenario. Implement the configuration service. It's just a WCF service. It's a web service.
Okay.
And this config web will work with your applications and give you all the capabilities I'm going to show you here. You just point this login at the address of your service. And everything I'm going to show you here in config web will work with your service as well.
Outstanding.
All right, so let's go ahead and log in as the administrator, because only admins can administer the configuration. And we'll log in and configure the web application. And here I am logging in. And you're going to notice I mentioned it was in monolithic mode.
Yes.
All right? So we've got here a single node running. All right? We're going to view the defined nodes. And, well, actually, we've got a couple running. We've got two web app servers running, the web user interface, one on this computer and one on this computer. Okay, I'm going to go back to the top, and we're going to see that each of those is configured, and the configurations always remain in sync across your clustered nodes. Okay, the configuration service includes notification services that make sure when you make a config update to one node, it's propagated to all your clustered load balance nodes. Okay? So right now we're running this application on two nodes, and each node is configured through a service repository. All the configuration settings for the application, for every service, come out of a repository, and that's a SQL Server database that gets installed with the app for each service. And so actually we're not booting up configuration options off of flat config files anymore. All the clustered nodes go to a single central repository, locked down in a database that you can back up, restore, you know, it's transacted, all the configuration settings for a working config.
Nice.
And that way we remain in sync across our nodes. No more copying of config files across six different servers to try to keep everything in sync and working.
Absolutely.
The other thing is, it's made so that the config files bootstrap to the service repository, but you can just copy these files, the website or any of the services, to any computer, and without modifying the config, they will start up and boot themselves into the cluster. So I call this dynamic clustering, and we'll see that in a minute when I run the benchmark.
Outstanding.
But here we're in monolithic mode, and what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to do something a little different. I'm going to start on my local Vista machine. So let's go ahead and point at a different website. If I hit the home page here, I'll point at my local machine, and we'll configure this one first, and then we'll go into the remote distributed modes. So let's go to my local machine, and we take a look at its config web here. We'll go ahead and close out of this browser session and launch config web on this guy. And we'll log in as the admin. And we'll see the same... one snap. I don't have this machine set up properly. We should go back to the other machine. A little bug.
No problem.
On my setup. I didn't set up this machine the way I thought I had, so my mistake. Back to where I was. And log in. And we'll change this one, which is fine. And we're going to edit the configuration of a service. The root node is kind of like the application settings that are global to all everything hosted within that. Kind of global application server settings, if you will. Like the number of net connections allowed. We'll take a look at some of these settings here. Edit configuration. The name of the service host. An administrator contact, who's hosting the service. We go into the detailed settings. You can set things at a global level, like how many HTTP net connections do you want to allow, so maybe some of the binding information. So just some basic settings at the global level. But what we want to do is edit the service for the web application to change this to a remote mode.
Now, if I just may, I might mm-hmm. just ask this. Now, what you're really doing here is this is a WCF based.
Yes.
Because WCF is really heavy on the config side.
Yes.
Yes.
And so all the WCF settings are largely being loaded out of the configuration repository. Mm-hmm. Now we'll let you set some things in config files that are handy to set, like maybe timeout values on some of your bindings and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But largely the goal of this is to move away from handling config in flat files that get scattered all over mm-hmm. and move to a central repository that manages this to make it much easier to manage and administer a distributed application.
And so basically, as you had said earlier, somebody could take from this sample application just this part of it.
That's
to
great.
Use in their reality.
Yes.
If they have a WCF system.
Or
right?
even just a web app. Right?
Yeah.
You take a web app and you have configurations that you'd like to change on the fly without stopping and starting the World Wide Web service or saving a web.config file, which we know actually shuts down your worker process and restarts
absolutely.
It becomes a kind of a pain in the butt, if you will, sometimes.
Yeah.
You can use this, implement the WCF
nice.
Service in your web app, and use this to administer all the config settings that you happen to want to put in the repository. The way it works technically is you can define any custom setting for your app that you want. The size of your edit windows, the style sheet being used, the background color of your web pages, the transaction timeout value, anything that you want to set, you can define as a setting member. It's just it's treated like a constant. It's just a static variable that you define in a settings file.
Mm-hmm.
And then that gets mapped into the repository, and we use reflection when the service node starts up to reflect the values out of the repository into the starting service.
Nice.
When you make a change to a setting, the notification service will automatically notify all your clustered load balance nodes. So if you're using like Cisco CSS to load balance your web farm, or maybe network load balancing services in Windows to load balance 6 servers, if you make a config change, you're configuring the entire cluster at once live without stopping and starting anything or redeploying new code to make those setting changes.
Outstanding.
Okay. In fact, here's an interesting setting change you can make. The app will work. It's also a great app for interoperability with non-Microsoft platforms, and I'll show that off too later.
Yeah.
But we can connect up in StockTrader to SQL Server, but the app also can connect up to Oracle 10G. So it's got a whole data access layer based on ADO.NET that'll work with Oracle databases. So maybe I want to change on the fly business services to connect up to Oracle instead of SQL Server. I could use the config system to change that setting in my business services layer, and lo and behold, all my clustered business service nodes will now be using Oracle as the back-end database instead of SQL Server.
Wow.
So that's an example of one of the config changes you might incorporate into your application. And we have a lot of these in this app because it's a benchmark app that's got a lot of different config options to benchmark different performance characteristics running in different modes, essentially.
Absolutely.
So here what I'm going to do is I'm going to change the mode from a monolithic app, and I'm going to start up a remote mode, and I'm going to update this from in process to IIS hosted web service. And what does this mean? It means my web app, which doesn't have any data access technology in it at all, all it's going to do is be a veneer user interface. It's now going to remotely invoke my business service layer, maybe across a firewall, a demilitarized zone in your corporate network, for instance. And business services is actually what's going to talk to the database and do all the heavy lifting and all the business logic. And all these data-bound repeaters you saw earlier in the StockTrader demo, they're not bound to database objects directly, right? Because the database is behind a firewall. They're bound to the business objects, the model objects that get passed back from the web service, the business service layer. So I'm now changing the mode to IIS hosted web service. And this is just a setting name I came up with. You could change this if you want. So I'll say IIS host web service. And we're going to go back to the config page. You can see that configuration key was successfully updated. And I'll go back to my configuration page. And you're going to notice I don't have business services down here anymore. I just got my root node and my web app.
Okay.
And of course, I'm still running on 2 web servers. So that config change just got propagated across both those clustered load balanced web servers.
Nice.
But I don't have any remote service yet. If I go here, you'll see on the right-hand side of config web all the remote connected services that you're using. I didn't give it a connection point. I have to tell the web app, where do I find business services? I need a URI. I need a URL to the business service layer. So let's go ahead and add that using config web. I'm going to go to the connections tab. And I'm now going to tell my web app where I'm going to locate my business service layer. I have no connections currently, so I'm going to say add connection. Now, as a benchmark app and as an interoperability sample, we have 4 different implementations of business services. It's just a web service, right? WCF, everything it does, exposes over Windows industry standard web services. So one of the options is actually to hook up to IBM WebSphere. Turns out the StockTrader app functionally was created by IBM as a WebSphere sample. And we ported it to .NET to show off the interoperability capabilities and to allow some benchmarking of the 2 scenarios. But as an interop sample, because our app implements the same WSDL and exposes the same service contract, we can actually remotely attach the web app, the ESP.NET web app, with no code changes, straight to the IBM WebSphere installation that I have running in my lab, just using IBM's downloaded code, downloaded right off of their website with no code changes to their app whatsoever. So let's go ahead and do that.
All right.
Well, actually, I changed it to IIS host web service. Let's hook up to .NET first. So we'll do the kind of the pure .NET implementation. I want to actually do the IIS host. So here are our options. I'll just point them out. WebSphere, a self-host WCF service, an IIS host ASMX service, and WCF, of course, replaces ASMX, but we do that to allow the benchmarking scenario. What kind of performance advantage do I get when I move from ASMX to WCF? And then finally, the business service is hosted in IIS, and that's what I configured it for, so let's add a connection to that. And I've got those business services running in a couple of places, but I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to attach to my main web server here and add that connection. And my connection point was successfully added, and we'll notice if I hit return to the connection page here, we're going to see something now. And that is, I've got connections to my IIS host. Now, I only established 1 connection. I'm getting 2 endpoints back because it'll bring back the ASMX endpoint, which is also hosted in IIS, as well as the WCF endpoint. Kind of hard to read, but my green, my highlight in green, is the one that's active based on the config setting that I set.
Okay.
Okay? So now if I go to my main home page for configuration, we're going to notice I've got business services now here as a remote connected service for my web app. Web app connects to business services.
Nice.
Now this configuration system will understand both a single service host hosting multiple services, which this host happens to be doing right now, it'll also understand an application that hooks up to many different service hosts. Maybe one's running in your business partner's website, one's running in a hosting provider, and it will lay out all of that graphically here for you. In fact, we can now select business services and configure it remotely. So I've just drilled down one layer, and I'm actually now looking at the configuration settings for business services now, which are slightly different than the web app. And these are the different modes it can run in.
Nice.
Okay, here's the database it's going to point at. Here's the order processing mode that it's going to use.
Nice.
In fact, let's go one level deeper and just switch here for a second. Well, let's run the app. Let's go back as a user and log into the actual app. And I'll go log in, log out. And when I'm logging in now as a user to the app, what's actually happening is, and you won't see any difference, is I'm remotely invoking my business service layer. So my ASP.NET web app isn't doing any data access or anything like that. It's just the UI talking remotely via web services to the WCF service. And WCF, the services, which might be behind a firewall, is up talking to the database and doing all the transaction work and the portfolio work and all of that.
Nice.
So that kind of gives you a lay of the land now. Well, let's go ahead and change the mode one more time. Go back to config web and do something a little different. Let's change the mode here in configuration for my web app, and instead of IIS host web service, let's have it hook up to WebSphere and show some interop. Okay?
Excellent.
So I'm going to go ahead and say WebSphere web service. Just a config key I created. It tells it which mode to connect up in. And it's using the same WCF client. There's no difference in the code path. It's just that I want users to be able to track and manage the different connection points all at once. And so, keep in mind, a web service in a WCF world is just a web service. Really, the app is blind what the implementation is. So it doesn't matter that it's Java running on Linux or a mainframe.
Sure.
To it, it's just a web service. So I'm hooking up to WebSphere,
okay,
which we've got hosted here in the lab. And I'll go back to my config page, and we'll go again to see that, hey, I don't have a connection to WebSphere established, because the connection I established earlier was to the WCF business services.
Okay.
So let's go back to the connections tab, and we'll add a connection. Here's my WCF service connections, which are both ASMX and WCF, and this time I'll say WebSphere. And I'll just insert the server name where I've got my WebSphere box running, which actually happens to be the same box. There's a couple of places. I'll hook up to a different box. I've got it over here on 192.168. 4.227. I think that's booted up with WebSphere. And WebSphere's listening on port 9080 right now. I'm not running the HTTP server. And hopefully I've actually got it running there. It'll tell me if I don't. I do, because it added it. You can always check the status of a server. These are showing green because it knows whether that service host is actually running or not. If a service host crashes or goes down, it will show red in your connections tab. And it'll also show red in your nodes tab. So it gives you some kind of online health monitoring of your actual distributed clustered servers as well.
Nice.
Kind of health status of what's going on. But now you'll notice I've got connections to my IIS host, but the one that's green is my connection to IBM WebSphere, right? Because I changed the config to go to IBM WebSphere. And in fact, if I go to my configuration tab, you'll notice I'm hooked up to IBM WebSphere. And that's the Trade 6.1 app, which I can also show you. And I'm just going to do something here real quick. I'm going to run the WebSphere implementation. They have a web app. This is the IBM WebSphere Trade 6 app running on WebSphere as in Java. And you'll see their UI in Java server pages activating EJBs on the back end. Okay, and if I go to my configuration here, actually let's go to 227. It's probably the one I hooked up to. If I go to the configuration menu, you'll notice that they're running EJBs in the back end, but one of their modes is web services. So what can I do here? First, let's go to this app, and let's log in as a user. Log in, log out. And I'm going to log in as, I think I have a WAS user established. We'll find out if that's a valid user ID. Apparently not. We're going to go in as UID 8. And log in. and I'm actually logging into WebSphere now. The UI is the same. The user doesn't know the difference because it's ASP.NET on the front end. But this is actually remotely connecting up to WebSphere, which is talking to a DB2 database, powering everything with Java EJBs on the back end. And again, no code changes whatsoever. The interrupt is just completely seamless because everything in WCF is just based on these industry standard web services.
Excellent.
In fact, let's go to our smart client and log out and go to the config page of the smart client, and you'll notice it has similar connection options. And I'll go ahead and connect the smart client up to the same web server box. And that's on port 9080, I always have to remember that. And connect up, and it'll tell me I'm successfully connected. So at this point, when I log in and log out, we'll go in as UID8 just to show you what's going on. So I'm UID8 here, UID8 on the other box, two sessions to the, two different sessions for the same user. This is also talking to WebSphere. All this information is coming from a DB2 database, from EJBs on the back end running in WebSphere 6.1.
Nice.
Okay, and you don't know the difference as a user. This is WPF presenting all the information. And the coding for this is brain dead simple because it's just WCF service, a client to a WCF service. I can go ahead and place an order.
Amazing.
In fact, let's do something a little different. Let's go to the IBM app and log in via IBM to IBM as UID8, same user. And we're on 227, that's right. Let's go ahead and buy something. Let's buy a 560 shares of stock S1. Okay, now it's got an order alert. You see what just happened in the background?
Mm-hmm.
There's my order alert popping up in my Windows Presentation Foundation app.
Nice.
Because it's receiving the order alert from the EJBs via, their DB2 connectivity that the order's been successfully processed.
Awesome.
So you can see that just works, right?
Incredible.
I place the order via the WebSphere app, but obviously these apps know about it.
So now, theoretically, it should work in both directions.
Oh, so let's go ahead and sell something. Let's sell what I just bought. I took a big loss on it. That's not good. I took a big loss because the stock prices move randomly as you place orders. I took a pretty big hit on that, but let's go ahead and sell it. And now before we do anything, I got to do this pretty quickly. There it is. There's my sell order in WebSphere.
Nice.
The order alert in the web page pops up based on a clip.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I hadn't done that quickly, what would have happened is this guy would have grabbed the order alert. And the way the system works, you only get an alert that it's been processed one time for obvious reasons. That's the way the app's designed.
Sure.
But you can see I placed the order via WPF, mm-hmm. and I got the order alert back in my WebSphere Java application in the web app.
I mean, that's a beautiful interop story, sure.
And so that's just, kind of one aspect of what's going on.
Okay.
I thought the one of the other things I might show off is some of the clustering and the load balancing. We'll have to transition over to my real lab setup where I've got all the servers set up and ready to rock and roll.
Sounds great.
Cool.
Is that good?
It's great. So we're still on.
All right, good. Let's stay on. Goes out of there.
Yeah, it's a really nice interop story. Interop's very important.
And what I'm going to show is I'm running the web app on a couple of nodes. And if I go into config web here, we'll see that same view. So let's go ahead and log in as the administrator. And we'll see that same view, and I left it running against WebSphere. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to change the configuration here. And I'm going to change it to IIS host web service again. Right? So I'll update that, and we'll let this config update go through. And we'll go back to my connections tab, and you'll notice now I'm not, the one that's highlighted in green is this one now, which is my WCF service on IIS, okay? Now keep in mind, again, I explained earlier, this is the ASMX endpoint that's showing up here, because IIS Host One app is hosting both the ASMX web service and the WCF web service as a benchmark comparison option. So now I've got this configured, and I'm just going to go ahead and take a look at the configuration menu and make sure I got the right nodes going here, because I want to do a very specific benchmark, and that's correct. That's what I want to see. Now I'm going to go back to the top here and take a look at my nodes for my web app, and it's running on two boxes. Now I'm going to just show you one thing. I actually don't want to be invoking my web app on this particular server right now, and I'm going to shut this particular app down, and let's go ahead and do that. I just want to get this set for the mode that I actually do want to run in.
Okay.
So we're starting back up. And now I'm going to go back to top here. and we're going to take a look at the view-defined nodes. And you'll notice what I did is I just shut the app down on that server because I don't want to be running the web app there. I've got two other servers for this little benchmark we're going to do.
Outstanding.
Okay. So this app is now connected, a single app connected to a single node running the business services. Okay. Now, I'm going to go ahead and drive some load against this. Hopefully I've got everything set up properly. Oh, one thing I'll just show you here. All the terms for the config web and a lot of the WCF terms are explained in this glossary. So there's a lot of documentation that goes around along with the sample.
Okay.
So this kind of shows you that. And you can look at all the different terms and what they mean.
Excellent.
And I think I might have showed you this, but I'll just make sure I show it to you. The configuration guide to how to use the config service is all boiled into this as well. Okay, so let's go over to here. Okay. And this is Mercury Load Runner. I use Mercury Load Runner to drive load against this for our standard benchmark comparisons that we publish out on MSDN, just for credibility. It's a great tool. We have our own tool with Visual Studio, but oftentimes people want to see benchmark numbers published with, you know, not with their own benchmark software. And Mercury Load Runner, you know, is pretty much something that people are familiar with for driving load and doing capacity planning and benchmarks.
Okay.
So I'm using Load Runner here to drive load against the system, and I'm going to have Mercury Load Runner go and drive load against two web servers that are going to talk to my remote business services.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and start that up. And I'm just going to start 100 users initially, and hopefully I've got this configured correctly. We're going to find out here in a second that I've got this set to go to the right servers. We'll know in a jiffy whether we get any errors here. I think we'll be okay. And we'll let Mercury start up, and we're going to get some real-time display on the transaction throughput. This is really one of the goals of the application, is to allow you to do different benchmarking and capacity planning for different modes that the app can actually run in.
Yeah.
What's happening now is, if you could kind of pan around in this lab, I've got approximately 150 different desktop PCs that can simulate up to 10,000 concurrent users hammering a system.
Nice.
Actually even 15,000. Okay, and these are set on a 1 second delay. Oh, we got a couple errors here, so I gotta reconfig something.
Cool.